Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation Special Edition, December 14th, 2011. Welcome to the program. We are playing a little maudlin traditional Christmas music that you might not hear anymore because it's illegal in the new America, where we have become so multicultural that we have no culture whatsoever. Anyway, here we are. It's a weird day for me, I got to tell you, and I'll tell you why. And I can get to it slowly, why it's a weird day, or I can tell you why it's a weird day and a special day, and then tell you the weird story of this afternoon, because it's not that odd, but it's very poignant, and it's important that I tell you, rather than talk about Gingrich and Romney and Romney and Gingrich, I feel like I'm living in someone else's country. Why do I care what a bunch of fat farmers in a trailer park in Iowa think about the election when I can't even vote? I feel like I'm on another planet. How many different elections can go on in this stupid country of ours? Primary after primary after debate after debate. Give me the election already. Stop telling me who's doing well, who's not doing well. What country am I living in? Who invented this system? Who corrupted this system? Who perverted the system where I don't even vote? I sit like a dummy sitting on the outside looking in. Again, another bunch of schmucks in another state. 18 fat guys in a coffee shop are telling me who's going to be the next primary candidate. I don't believe this. Give me a shot at the election. Anyway, that's how I feel about it. But that's not why it's a special day. It's a special day because tonight, actually right now, prayers are being said to memorialize my mother's passing in December of 2003, exactly 8 years ago, today at sundown, and a group of people are praying for her soul. And it's a very important moment for me because it is my mother, after all, and we remember the departed if we're a civilized human being. And if we're not civilized, then we have no such cultural remembrances, we have no culture at all, we have no traditions, we have nothing. In other words, we're just like the average occupier, atheist, communist, anti-American zero. But if you're civilized and if you're a human being, what you have are traditions. And in your traditions, whatever they may be, whether it be Christian, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, it doesn't matter. Every religion on earth celebrates or memorializes the passing of loved ones, or else what is the purpose of religion after all? So let me tell you the long story leading up to that, because at the end of the show, I'm rushing to a small memorial service. And I'm not going to do a maudlin show, don't get me wrong, but I want to tell you this is an odd day how things work out. So today, just today, I don't know why I made the appointment, but I did. I went to the dermatologist. I waited in the room. I hate waiting in these rooms because I have a slight claustrophobia. And I'm one of these patients who opens the door when they close the door. They put me in a cubicle, close the door, and you sit there, oh, you wait for the doctor. I open the door because I can't stand being locked in a room. You know, it's like an interrogation cell waiting for Chaz to come in. So I'm sitting, she comes in, and she burns 7 cancers off the side of my head. They come up every year or so from my youthful indulgences when I didn't know anything about the sun or whatever. So yeah, it happens. You get old and it burns them off. And then I go from there, and the fog is lifting in San Francisco. It was such heavy fog, you couldn't see over the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, it was like 50 foot, right? Which I love this time of year. And the fog's lifting, the city's turning into light. It's so gorgeous, the light show in this city. It's the most beautiful city on earth for a number of reasons. And I go to the North Beach restaurant to have a quick lunch to relax before the show, right? Oh, wait, sorry. I'm missing a very important part of it. I'm a little loopy right now from the burning of the head. Before I go to the restaurant, I go into my apartment building. And I've told you before, and if you read Abuse of Power, you know that Jack likes that elevator as well. Okay, I love the elevator in this high rise because it's got such diversity of people in this building. I'm a talker. They don't know me. I talk to strangers, and within 30 seconds, I can sometimes get a story out of people that maybe they never told their mother. I swear to God, I'm waiting in the basement from the garage to get in the elevator. I see a very old woman, with a younger man in his 40s on crutches, seriously look injured. They get in the elevator. I said, don't rush. I'll hold the door for you, as I normally would do. I mean, for God's sakes, it wouldn't. So he gets in. He says, thank you very much for holding the door. It's very kind of you. So I look at him. Heavy set. I said to him, how'd you hurt your leg? He said, bone cancer, both legs and both hips. So, I mean, you're floored. Now, I've gone only 3 floors, and I know the guy in the elevator is dying. He's got bone cancer. I'm on floor 4 now. And I say to him, how do you think this happened? Floor 6 now. He tells me it's something about congenital childhood. Floor 8 now, the next thing. And he says, but I've got my mother. I'm very lucky. Floor 10 now already, the next part of the story. By the time they get out on floor 18, he says to me, and I say to him, well, tonight I'm celebrating remembering my mother. He said, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was unbelievable, right? That's number 2, dermatologist, bone cancer. Now, so take care of stuff in the apartment. Go in the car, and I head over to the North Beach restaurant. I never eat lunch in the city, by the way. I don't like to eat lunch. I usually eat takeout food in front of a television set. I go in the restaurant. I'm enjoying a quick lunch. What am I eating? My typical eggplant, no cheese, pasta with Lorenzo sauce on it, whatever, just tomato sauce and garlic, and a little green, and a glass of Chateau Hetch Hetchy, which is the local reservoir. It's the very good water. Hetch Hetchy, I'm sitting down, and I'm just really basically staring off into the horizon, watching people. A guy comes over. We talk, a nice guy. All of a sudden, 5 EMTs rush in the restaurant. And I didn't know what they were doing. Were they coming there to eat or what? I look over, a guy is on the floor. Now, these things happen, but not that often. So I said, you know me, I have a dark sense of humor. So I say to the maitre d' Bowie, who was Vietnamese, I know him for so many years. I said, was he eating eggplant like me? He says, no. He says, no. He came and ordered a Campari and soda and fell off his chair. He had a little heart attack and a seizure at the same time. What are you going to do? So we started to talk about the Vietnamese, vision of death in his religion. Now, Bowie's a great guy. He flew jets. He flew fighter planes against North Vietnamese pilots and against Chinese pilots during the Vietnam War. This guy is so understated, you never believe it talking to him. So he talked about the Vietnamese view of fate. And he said that in his religion or his culture, they have a memorial for the deceased each month on a full moon, you know. And I said, well, you know, tonight's the memorial for my mother. It's been 8 years in December. And I said, I'm going to do what I do. And that's the end of that. So anyway, it was just, you know, how do these things work? Who knows how anything works? Is there any connection in what I just told you? What do I know? From a dermatologist burning off skin cancer to a man in an elevator with bone cancer to a man in a restaurant falling off a chair and having a heart attack to a memorial for my deceased mother, all I can say to you is, the man upstairs is in charge, and when he pulls the card, he's going to pull a card. And you do the best you can until that day, and you pray to God that when you go in front of him, that he doesn't judge you too harshly, because judge you he will. Whether you believe it or not doesn't matter to me, because I'm not God and you're not God. And if you're gambling there is no God, good luck to you, my friend, because I'd like to know what you think is waiting for you in the next world. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I will ask you, how do you memorialize your departed? I know you'd rather hear me talk about Gingrich and Romney and Romney and Gingrich and Gingrich and Romney and Santorum and Paul and Gingrich and Romney and Paul is on a chair now with a white shirt and looking like Bob Dole with the bicycle again, which killed Bob Dole's chances, if you remember, because his advisor said, show him you're young and fit, go run around on a treadmill, and that was the end of the election. It was like the squirrel moment in the tank for the gentleman from New England, whatever his name was, Dukakis, what a name like that. Can you imagine if you had to say President Dukakis when you were a kid in school? I pledge allegiance to President Dukakis, forget about it. Thank God he stood up in that tank and his head looked like a chipmunk. But Bob Dole ran for the presidency a number of centuries ago, and he was doing very well in the polls, if you remember. And his advisors, who, as you well know, shafted him, as most advisors work for both sides of the aisle, they said, you know, Mr. Dole, Mr. Whatever, Mr. Senator, because he was a senator then. You got to show the people that you're still with it. You still have it. So get on a treadmill and take off your shirt and show them that you're running on a treadmill. End of story. The poll numbers dropped by 80 points the next day. We saw a spindly old man in an undershirt. Today they did it to Ron Paul. They gave him a little tricycle, an exercycle, and a bicycle, and a shirt. It was like the Bob. It was like a photoshopped picture of Bob Dole. So you got to learn to laugh at things. What else are you going to do about it? Now, if you keep it up and you don't want to call me on this and you want me to do Gingrich, Romney, Gingrich, Romney, I'll do that. I can do it if you want. But you know my feelings on the issue. My feelings are quite clear. Any Republican candidate would be more satisfactory to me as a president than the Marxist that we have in the White House. That's my belief system. That's my religious belief. That we have a Marxist in the White House based upon pretty strong evidence, in my opinion. Doesn't mean he's an evil person. It's just that he doesn't believe in our way of life. That's all. And I never really wanted to live in North Vietnam, frankly. But if you do, okay, vote for the Democrats again. If you always dreamed of no vote in a country, the ascension of power into a few people's hands, by all means vote for a Democrat because that's where they're all coming from. They are now the party of tyranny. They weren't always this way, but as I've said to you many times on this show, The Savage Nation, if JFK were alive today, he'd be considered a right-wing maniac. He wouldn't be considered a Democrat. Democrats today are radical left-wing socialist tyrants. Every one of them wants to take away more and more of our freedom, in my estimation. For example, here's a new Senator Barbara Boxer says the GOP payroll tax bill will kill 8,100 people for Christmas. Now, anything Bab says, as you well know, is a lie. Everything that comes out of it. How do you know when Barbara Boxer is lying? You don't even finish that joke because you know it. It's from 1912. So as I go to break, you can see what mood I'm in today. It's going to be a fabulous show because we're going to be all over the map. And if you want to talk about the departed, if you want to talk about how in your religion or your culture or your traditions, you remember the individuals who were close to you. You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. Or if you care to talk about another topic, it's the same number. In the interim, though, I'd like to play Mozart's Requiem as we go into the break for my mother, who was a very special person, without whom I wouldn't have not only my sense of humor, but my life itself. So let's go to that right now, Baylor, please. Mozart's Requiem. If this doesn't move you, you're dead. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. He wrote it for, I think, his father's passing. And, boy, wouldn't it be nice to be Mozart, huh? Wouldn't it be great to be Mozart, to be able to do that with the human mind? Look at what we have today. From Mozart to a rap singer in a few hundred years, look what the human race has degenerated into. Anyway, it's just one man's opinion. If you don't like it, you know what you can do with it. You can change the dial. But somehow I think that Mozart, methinks Mozart was on a little different level than what we have in the entertainment business today. And sometimes I myself will listen to Beethoven. I actually can't listen to Beethoven anymore because it's too emotionally charged for me. If I listen to Beethoven, I actually start to shake. I go to pieces. My body shudders, particularly in the ninth when I play the ninth, because I can't imagine a human mind on that level. I try to fathom what it must be like to have that kind of mind, and it's hard for me to even perceive living with that kind of mind. The same kind of mind, the same kind of body that we all have in the same species, that we could have a man on the level of a Beethoven and all the way up and down the scale. I mean, we don't have to run anybody down to make the point. The point is made by itself. And it shakes me because I can't understand how different human beings can be. Now, of course, we're living in an age of communism where we are told that we're all equal. Well, in the sense that we're all a pile of bones at the end of the road, yeah, we're all equal. But really, that's not what matters. What matters is what we are while we're here on this earth, not that we're a pile of bones at the end for the communist government to throw into a potter's field or to incinerate and toss out into an ash heap in Dover, Maryland, along with the remains of other soldiers. The new atheistic military that recognizes witchcraft along with Christianity. That's the new military under the government that we have now. Witchcraft is now on the same level as Christianity. So in other words, imagine World War II, men charging into the enemy's lines, believing in nothing. It's unbelievable to me that the denigration of this country, and it's all tied into the denigration of religion. And it all comes up for me on a day like today. Sometimes I can forget it all, but when I think about a day like today, which is a very important day for me in this regard, it's amazing. Amazing to see that the downfall of this country, and it's all based upon the attacks upon religion. Ben on line 3, welcome to the Savage Nation from New York's great WOR. Go ahead, please.
Is that God does not give rudder orders. He expects us to stand our watches the best we can.
No, I agree. Like, I believe so Ben, I believe in free will. Otherwise, we'd be robots.
That quotation was from a friend of mine who's a bosun of a ship I was serving in. During World War II, he was second officer in a supply ship that the British were sending to Tobruk, where the British garrison were fighting the Nazis and were encircled by the Afrika Korps, and
yes,
they were maintaining a lifeline to them by sea. My friend had helped get the ship alongside, and they were about to discharge the supplies when Stukas hit the vessel. He was on the bridge at the time, and he was one of three survivors. He was physically blown off the bridge into the harbor of Tobruk. He's wounded. He's in the mess of the harbor, and he climbs up onto the quay where they were discharging, and he surveys the damage of the ruins of the ship burning from stem to stern. And he's standing there in shock. His shipmates and comrades have been killed. He thinks he's the only survivor. There were only three survivors in that one.
Astounding story. But I don't mean to cut you off. We have 15 seconds in this segment. Ben, this story tells you more than ever that we have free will. Is that what you were getting to?
More or less. The other was the
punchline. I agree with you. Stay on the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, we're talking about, you know, heady stuff such as the departed and how you memorialize it and what it means to be a civilized human being and remembering your deceased. I know you say, why do you want to be so gloomy? I don't know that it's so gloomy. I don't know that it's such a gloomy thing to talk about reality. I think it's gloomier to avoid reality and wind up with agony. And I think that's why so many people are drugged, because they won't face reality. I think reality is the best medicine. I think real reality is the best medicine for all of us, and I think the drugs or the desire to avoid reality is probably the greatest stress that we can experience. So here's a little reality from the political world. In my last book, before the novel, I wrote Trickle-Up Poverty, and I called for an imposition of tariffs on China-made goods, remember? Well, the fake neocons who said that we have free trade naturally jumped on me for that and said, oh, no, we can't have tariffs. I said, what, are you crazy? Every other country on earth tariffs us. It's all a lie. There are tariffs on U.S. goods. Well, this what just came out. China is going to put duties on U.S. cars ranging up to 21.5% on imported cars and SUVs with engines larger than 2.5 liters. China is imposing tariffs on U.S. cars. They're also tariffing cars made by BMW and Mercedes-Benz. There is a trade war going on right now, started by China. Anyone who doesn't see this is a fool. And anyone who says that we have free trade is a liar. They're owned lock, stock, and barrel by the lobbyists. Now let's go back to regular programming. Ben in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
We were saying about my friend. He was standing wounded, bleeding, and having flash burns, and totally in shock and surveying the scene of the ship that
right.
was devastated.
And
a British harbormaster goes over, shouts at him, hey, you, the next ship in the berth adjacent is short a man. The reason they're short a man is the Stukas went over and strafed. He says, get on board. There's a war to fight.
So in other words, even though he was just almost mortally wounded, they still needed him as a soldier, correct?
As a seafarer, yeah. And he had to...
But what is the point of your story? I don't quite understand it. What, he had the will to just die, but he chose to live?
He had the will because of the certain inner strength that he had at that juncture.
I think what you're saying is a weaker man probably would have perished in the same situation. Is that what you're saying?
Weaker men would have perished. He went back to fight the war.
Yep, I get it. I hear you, and you're 100% right, and I agree with free will. I do not believe God controls our destiny in every way. I do believe, by the way, see, it's a mixture, what you believe. Do you really care what I believe? I'll tell you, radio host Michael Savage, what I personally believe. I believe that there's a mixture of fate and free will. How do you like that? See, to me, it's not either or. I just don't believe it's either or. I think that there is a confluence of events in our life that would indicate that to a large extent we have free will. In other words, let's say you're 17 years old and you've not used drugs and you go to a party and they're using marijuana. And you have a choice right then and there whether to pick up that poison stick and take yourself down that evil road of destruction, self-immolation, deception. Or you can say, no, I don't, and let your friends ridicule you, and, oh, you're not cool, you're not this, you're not that. Well, I mean, everyone has faced it one way or another, whether it be sex, drugs, or whatever. And so none of us are made of iron, but you have to be able to walk away from things. That's free will. I think that's what they teach people in rehab, don't they? That you're not a victim of your own desires. In other words, you can override a desire, however strong that desire is. What is your desire? What does it mean? You have a craving for sugar, or you have a craving for chocolate, and you know it's going to get you sick. Well, you avoid chocolate and sugar. You live through the sugar craving, don't you? Why can't you apply that same ability to override that to a sexual urge, or to an urge for a drug? Well, I don't get why. I'll leave it to the rehab people to tell you why. All I can tell you is that we have free will. And now I talk about my mother today because it's her memorial today. I distinctly remember her getting us ready for what was coming as young kids. I mean, this is the maybe 12, 13, 14, she started brainwashing me already with. She'd pick up the newspaper, the Daily News, whatever, and she'd show stories, I told you, or she would say things. I don't know, she said, I read about people who were using drugs. To me, they're just weak. Over and over again, I didn't even know what she was talking about. She was conditioning me to believe what was true, which is that people who went into the world of using marijuana or other drugs were weak. That's what she was trying to say to me. So when the time came that one of my evil friends or stupid friends would offer me a joint, I'd be able to resist, which I wasn't able to because I was weak. And I tried it, and I was basically used it like other morons in my circles, many of whom got stuck for years. I luckily was able to get away from it. But the fact is, she was trying in her own way to teach me that you have to have the will to stand up to a lot of different things. And sometimes I have to remember those lessons all over again, truthfully, at whatever age you're at. You have to relearn these lessons because you forget them. It's easy to start to drift away from your own upbringing or your own strength. You can drift away. You can be cut adrift from your own strength in your own life. So again, we're coming back to what makes you strong. What gives you willpower? How do you attain willpower? The power to withstand criticism when you know you're right and they're just trying to ride you or run you down. So like for me, I mean, I remember the poem If by Rudyard Kipling, which I'm not going to bore you with, but you could look it up yourself. I've read it on this show many times. I've recited it, rather. And some of those lines come back, especially now. If you can, right? While all those about you are hating you but not hate yourself. Remember that one? Well, I face this an awful lot on the internet when people who are minuscule, mini-me's, incapable of my level of broadcasting, attack me, I ignore them. I know that they're Lilliputians who are just jealous. Or the banning in Britain. By the way, I have a letter that was just written for me by another wonderful congressman, Louis Gohmert, member of Congress, Republican, of course, from Texas, wrote to the Honorable Hillary Rodham Clinton on my behalf, and I'll read you the letter a little later. Louis Gohmert, member of Congress, thank you very much. It's only been the Republicans who have stood up for free speech. Not one of your superb progressive Democrats has understood what free speech is. So we're going to talk about that as well on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers now because it's a special day for me. And I told you why. I don't want to repeat it again and just, you know, work this into the ground because I think it would be kind of in a certain way running in the other direction. But I have a picture. in my hand. So my Vietnamese friend Bui said, he said, oh, yes. He said, on every full moon, we carry a picture of our deceased, as the Chinese do, as you well know. And he said, we have a memorial service by lighting of candles and all. You know, many religions and cultures have overlaps in their traditions, you know, by the way, in so many ways. There's more similarity in religions and cultures with regard to the respect, the memory for the dead, than there are differences, incidentally. The only culture that I can't really relate to are the Mexicans who sleep in a graveyard on the Day of the Dead. I don't think I'm ready for that one yet, but all right, to each his own. If you want to take a nice serape and lay down in a graveyard with a candle, good luck to you. You know, it's a big world, and with 7 billion people, I expect people to do it any way they wish. So I have a picture of my mother that I carry with me. Strange, even when I travel, I just took her with me to Florida. Here I am in her little Pullman kitchen. It couldn't have been more than 3 feet wide in Queens, New York, in an attached house. You know the kind of kitchen that you have to walk sidewise to get through? There's a 6-burner stove with 12 dishes on it that she cooked. And there's a huge pot of soup. And she's smiling, holding a ladle in her hand at the camera. And I'm behind her with my arm around her on one of my many trips back to visit New York and to sell a book to a publisher, or try to anyway. God, look what time and gravity did to me, my God. Anyway, so I'm looking at the picture. And there it is. I carry the picture, and I remember her at her happiest, which was cooking. She loved food, as I do, and loved cooking. And she always had a smile. She had a ready smile, and she gave me my sense of humor. I remember how I developed my sense of humor. Maybe it was inherent in me, but I don't know that humor is inherent in you. I know that because we had a tragic situation with my brother, she was very sad when I was a little boy, and I used to try to cheer her up by telling her stories that I used to entertain her. Would you believe it? Would you believe that I would entertain my mother when she was crying? Would you believe such a story? I mean, I do remember this. I never talk about it because it's too much of my own memory involved, and I don't want to exploit it to that extent. She'd be sad. She'd be crying over my brother and what God did to her, or how it happened in fate. And I would do stupid, idiotic acts for her. I would change my voice into some crazy, geeky thing. Or I would start walking with like a broken foot. I don't know, whatever I could do to make her smile and laugh, I entertain my mother. So you say, where do you get a sense of humor? Do I know if it's inherent, or you develop it, or whatever? What do I know? It's God's knowledge, not mine. Let's go to the callers. Texas Greg, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Brother Savage, I want to pray for you, your loss, and the memorial of your mother. My mother died 3 years ago to the day. And I can feel your pain. She meant the world to me, and she left a great impression, and she taught me everything I know. What I do to get refuge, I look at my kids, and I see their eyes, and I live through them, and my mother, they can see in my mother, they can see in my eyes, and I just try to be the best I can and live day to day and pray to God to forgive me for all my sins.
Amen, and that is so true, because all of us are so imperfect, aren't we? And, you know, Greg, we all say that we're not going to make the same mistakes that our parents made with our children, but we do, don't we?
Yes, we do. They're called experiences for the future generation, and hopefully they learn from them.
Well, you certainly are a very clear thinker, and all I can say is thank you for calling the show, and I'm glad that you listened to this program. Look, if this is too more than for the average listener who's listening to the Savage Nation and they want to go on to Gingrich and Romney and Ron Paul, and I can do that, trust me, but I don't know. My head's not in that right now, because today was a very, very odd day, going from the dermatologist where they burnt off the 7 small skin cancers she did, the doctor. She's a great, best dermatologist I ever had. And I like female doctors. I don't know what it is. It's just that they're not, I mean, some doctors are, men are okay, but I don't know. There's a certain touch to a woman doctor. Then the elevator with the man in the cast who tells me he's got bone cancer. Oh, my God. Then to the North Beach restaurant enjoying lunch, and 5 EMTs run in, and a guy comes and orders a Campari and soda, falls off his chair with a heart attack. Hello, memorial for deceased each month on a full moon to the Vietnamese. My mother's memorial today, 8 years ago, December of 03. I can't believe it. I remember the day I got the call. It was another dark December day. And we had to get on a plane to New York the next day. So here we are. Here we are, New York, Elizabeth. W.O.R., go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
I'm celebrating my mother's life, December 06, 5 years. She was 12 when she lost her mother.
You're saying your mom died on this day in that
Not
year?
On this day, December 6th.
I see.
December 6th, 2006.
How do you remember your mother? What do you do on that day?
Well, it's what I've been doing lately. I celebrate her life any which way I can. And by that, I mean when she was 12, she lost her mother, cancer. So that ties into this whole cosmic thing you're talking about. Mm. And her mother was only 38 years old. She was the eldest of five. Mm-hmm. They all got split up, put in orphanages and foster homes.
Oh.
And when she went on in her life, she married early to escape poverty. And
yes.
A horrible life. Nobody really took her in and loved her. She had
right.
a child. Her husband
right.
beat her. She ran uh-huh. away. She married my father and produced three more children. Then they adopted two children.
They really had a big heart for doing good.
My father as well, but it was really my mother, because she said if she could ever give a really good home to kids, she would. So we had this kind of life. We lived in a 100-year-old house. It was kind of dilapidated, but it was filled with love. She took in every stray animal you could imagine. And we lost her 5 years ago. So what you're saying, just anytime you talk about your mother, it just brings me to her, and particularly this year, because I work in a very humble job at the moment in a little corporate cafe, and one of my customers is 27, and he had a 12-year-old sister who was stricken with brain cancer.
Oh, my
and
God.
She got out of 14 months of chemo in June. And I said, you know,
oh my God.
By the cafe. I have a 12-year-old kid. He's going to be around here. Let her hang out with me.
I hear you. So you've had a lot of tragedy around you, and yet you don't let it pull you down, right?
No, and it was because, like, just what you were saying about your mother brainwashing you. Every time there's a homeless person on the TV, my mother would pull me to the TV and say, look at these shopping bag ladies. And I worked with homeless people in Times Square when I was 17 and 18, living in Westchester.
In other words, she was warning you, in other words, not to become that. Is that what you were saying?
No, she was giving me, she was making me a giver.
Uh-huh. So she wasn't pointing at the homeless to tell you to avoid becoming them. She was pointing at them to tell you to help them.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that's a little different. You have a very, very special memory because your mother was a very unique human being. And usually poverty doesn't ennoble. Poverty makes people mean. You have to understand that. And you have a very unique experience in that your mother's poverty made her a specially good person. When in 99% of the cases, poverty makes people very mean and nasty. I'm going to send you a special Christmas present. It's a copy of my novel, Abuse of Power. And before I take this break, what I'd like to do is play a very special prayer for my mother right now in the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Liberalism is a mental disorder, as you well know. It's also an illicit mental disorder. New Haven, Connecticut asks the state of Connecticut to allow illegal aliens to vote in city elections. New Haven Mayor John DeStefano, perennial shame upon the DeStefano name, wants illegal immigrants who live in the city to be able to vote in municipal elections. Obviously, he's a Democrat. There's 10,000 illegal immigrants, which they call non-citizen immigrants, and he wants them to vote. And listen to the lies. He says, DeStefano, a Democrat, said illegal immigrants pay taxes indirectly through rent. Did you hear this? DeStefano should be taken out of office and arrested for violating both the state and the U.S. Constitution, by the way. This city is breaking federal law and state law, and it's a shock to me that we have a government anarchy like this. So if you like to comment on that, don't call me, because there's nothing you could say about it other than what I've already said. New Haven mayor wants illegal immigrants to be able to vote in municipal elections. John DeStefano is violating state and federal law, and as a lawbreaker, he should be immediately arrested and tried for breaking the law, right or wrong. Houston, Texas, Ron, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. My mother, when she died, In the 1970s, she left me $3,000. She ended up dying in 1981. She had Alzheimer's disease, which she didn't even know the last 10 years who she was, hardly. And when she did die, we used that money to put the family together. As she said, I want you to celebrate when I die.
So what do you do every year that you when you remember the day, what do you do?
Absolutely nothing. You know, the old Christian beliefs going back to the 14 and 1500s was not to go to heaven when you die, but to come back on the resurrection. As it says, don't even marvel at this, is in the book of John, that all those in the memorial tombs are coming back. So according to the older Christian beliefs, your mom will walk the earth again, but probably after Armageddon. And in fact, the book of Daniel confirms that there is going to be something like that, because remember...
I'm not going to argue theology with you, because it's theology is a belief that cannot be proven. What I would say to you is that's not how I see it. When I have a fantasy about the next world or death, I believe my mother is in heaven cooking for God. Now you say, well, come on, that's childish and idiotic.
No.
Do you allow me my fantasy in order to get through life?
Oh, absolutely. It's wonderful. It keeps things going. But remember,
Ronnie, here's what I'm trying to get at. In other words, why can't I believe my mother's in heaven cooking for God? Who's to stop me from believing that? Why should I not believe that? Why can't I have a friendly memory of her cooking and making people happy? Because if there is a God in heaven, which I'm pretty sure and hope there is an entity, well, you say, well, he's not a corporal being, so what does he need someone to cook for him? I don't know. In my fantasy, there's a kitchen in heaven and she's enjoying herself. So I have to have some fantasy about the next world in my own way. I realize it's not part of a religion to have such a view. Now, here's a nice religion in Egypt, thanks to Soros, George Soros' money, and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. The Islamists are taking over Egypt, and they want sin-free tourism, no bikinis and no alcohol. The lucrative tourism industry will be decimated by the fanatics. The 9th century fanatics want to destroy the tourist industry because it's not clean enough for them.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Senator, here's a tax cut for you of about $1,000, but sorry, you might die from breathing in too much poison. We've asked for a lot from Santa in our day, but we never asked for lead, arsenic, and mercury.
Tell us who gets your endorsement.
I like Mitt Romney.
Stop. This is the most insane senator in the history of this republic. Barbara Boxer saying that the payroll tax bill from the Republicans will kill 8,100 people for Christmas. Not only is she a liar and a psychotic, in my opinion, but she's probably the most cynical of all the senators because of the great fortune her and her family have accrued since she became a U.S. senator based upon rezoning of land and things of that nature. It's a shocker to me how they get away with it. But then again, we have a government of the government, by the government, and for the government. And then we have two parties which have many similarities, which I guess they should, and a fundamental difference. To me, the difference is that the Democrats seem to be the party of the illegal alien, The illegal alien is the party they're represented by Holder, who wants citizens automatically registered to vote. In other words, the reason they want automatic registration is because they could never get elected in a free republic amongst those of us who actually pay taxes. In Connecticut, New Haven, mayor, a Democrat, wants illegals to vote in municipal elections, both violating the constitutions, one federal, one state. So what does that tell you about Democrats? In a fair election in a free republic, neither of them would be in power because the people would never have voted for them. Therefore, they're going to the non-citizen to maintain the status quo. You understand how dangerous this is? Also today, this is the Savage Nation, and I'm memorializing the day that my mother passed away on December of this day, 8 years ago today in 03. And I was telling you some stories, and I was asking you how you memorialize the passing of your deceased in your family or in your tradition. And we've had some very interesting calls. I've told you some things that happened to me today that were pretty amazing. I mean, you know, you say ordinary lives. What's an ordinary life? An ordinary life is going to the dermatologist, going in the elevator and finding out a guy you don't know had bone cancer in 3 seconds, going to a restaurant, seeing a man fall off a chair after ordering a Campari and soda, and then coming to the radio show and memorializing your mother. How's that for an ordinary day? People say to me, how come you don't retire? How do you do it? Why do you go on? Why don't you quit? Why don't you? What are you, crazy? Where in the world could I ever have a more dynamic interaction with the world than on radio? Can you tell me a place? Certainly not on television. You can't have it. Television is not as intimate a medium. It's a tough act, television. Don't get me wrong. I admire anybody who could do television well. It's a very tough business because you can't be intimate on television. You can only fake intimacy. In radio, you have to be intimate to survive, or else you're not going to have an audience that's going to be with you. If you just give them the crap, Democrat, Republican, who wants to listen to it after a while? So I'm calling you, I'm asking you to call the show and tell me how you memorialize your deceased. It's a very interesting topic, I think. Florida, Victor, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
It's an honor to speak to you, Dr. Savage. I've listened to you since I syndicated you first here in Florida.
That's a long time now. That goes back to the year 2000.
I was listening to you on a Sea Crane radio with a super antenna. Now I listen to you on...
I can't remember Sea Crane. They used to advertise in the local stations. You were able to pick it up in Florida way back when, huh?
Well, ever since I syndicated you here in Florida, I've been listening. I think it's about 10 years, 12 years.
I'm on the great WFTL in Fort Lauderdale, 50,000 watts of pure joy. So what's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to tell you, I'm a spiritualist. That's my religion. Basically, it's like Christianity, except we think that the dead don't sleep. All right? Your consciousness survives. Neurobiology, quantum physics, there's enough scientific proof that you're still there. You don't go anywhere. You know, Einstein...
So where is the consciousness of... Where do we find the consciousness of the deceased? Where would we find that?
Well, with a little practice, they're right here with you. They're not a zillion miles away. They're just a few... quantum physics says they're just a millionth of a millionth of an inch from us. With a little practice, it's just like listening to a conversation. My mother, God bless her, I honor her. I have a problem. I'm 60 years old, and I still go to my mother. You know, I'll sit down in the kitchen, I'll put a cup of coffee on one side of the kitchenette table and one on my side and sit and talk to her just like she's there.
Wow.
The difference is, I stop to listen.
Well, you know, it's interesting. For many, many years, and I stopped recently, whenever I had a quandary I was in, I would ask my father, who's been dead since 1970, I'd say, Dad, what would you do? And I heard him answer me, but it was in my own head. You understand that?
Absolutely. That's exactly how it works.
I mean, in other words, he wasn't outside over there. If he was, then I'd be Jimmy Carter. You know what I'm saying? He was inside. He was, in other words, my memory of him, I'm thinking what he would think. I don't know that he was there in my head.
Well, neurobiology teaches us that they can access your brain. They can access your memories because you're all electromagnetic. You know, your brain is a storage unit. And if they're energy and we're energy, you're feeling depressed, you know, your mother could say, here, let me access this memory of a wonderful time we had. And then all of a sudden you remember it and you go, wow, you know, I'm not so depressed.
Well, let's go into this a little bit more because it's fascinating to me. So how far back can this neurobiological memory go? Can it go back? How many generations back can you tap into your ancestry?
Well, that's past life experiences. I think you're...
Well, no, wait a minute. Your mother's past life experience. Oh, she was there in this life. I get it.
Yeah, in this life. But she could tell me something that she did in the past that I wouldn't know, that I could ask another family member, hey, did this happen? And then they'll look at you like, how the heck did you know that?
Well, you know, this is intriguing to me because let's take other religions for a moment. Even though you're a Christian, there are other religions who look at the world differently. You have two sects of Islam. You have Sunnis and you have Shia. They've been at war with each other since the 1200s, and they're fighting over, I guess, the ascendancy to the supremacy of the religion, and they've been fighting ever since, like the Hatfields and the McCoys, or the Christians and the Catholics and the Protestants, in a more murderous way. What is that all about? What are they remembering?
They're just, you know, they're still carrying the baggage. You know, they're still dragging the luggage. We believe that when you leave the body, you know, you sort of leave the luggage behind because you don't have a need for it anymore. These guys are just programming each generation to hate each other.
Mm. Amen. 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 Leave it behind already. Come to this country, leave your hate behind. That should be the door to every airport. Welcome to America, leave your hate behind.
Yes, because it's not going to do you any good in this world, and it's not going to do you any good in the next.
Oh, it's a chain. Hatred is a chain. It's a chain around your neck. I know that. I rarely hate anybody. I don't know if you know that, Victor. I don't think you hear much hatred. I mean, you hear anger. You hear rage. I get enraged. But I don't carry hatred because it's impossible to get through a day if you have too much of it. And then you become just literally a crust of hatred.
I'll catch a little righteous indignation from you. But, you know, you're right. You're correct.
I have felt hatred, but I don't carry it. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference.
Oh, yeah. Well, something like that you can work on. You can say, I hate the way I look, so I'm going to go to the gym and work out. I'm going to eat.
Yeah. Well, no, I barely hate anything about myself. I may not be happy with certain things, but I don't hate. But there are people in the media that I've said I hate. There are some that I absolutely hate for what they're doing to the audience because they know better. And they're responsible for the denigration of America. I would say the leftists like Chris Matthews are responsible for the downfall of this country's mind. They're all Democrat operatives. They should know better, and they try to destroy the people's mind. It's unbelievable to me. It makes me very upset. No, it happened a long time ago where I learned to drop hatred. I'm not a hateful person inherently. As I say, I get angry, but, you know, just talking about my own feelings, it's that I was once asked to do something to somebody who had hurt my mother. Okay? I'm not going to go into details. This individual had robbed her of a lot of money. She was so infuriated by it. She was goading me to do something about it. You know what I said to her? I said, vengeance is not ours. Vengeance is God's. I said, leave it go. And true enough, as time had it, God did seek his vengeance on this individual, and he was punished.
We believe that, you know, you have personal responsibility and that things will balance themselves one way or the other.
Do you think that each man on this earth, each individual on this earth, has the same quotient of happiness and sadness?
I think they have the potential.
Well, why then would I meet a man in the elevator today who, in a few floors, I saw him on crutches with his old bent-up mother, and I said, oh, how'd you hurt your feet? He said, I have bone cancer. I said, oh, my God. He said, both in my legs and in my hips. Why did he have bone cancer, a young man like this at age 42 years old? I mean, why? Why does God punish someone, give it to people like that, when some of the most evil people on the earth seem to live a very good life and never suffer on this earth? No one could answer that question.
Well, you know, we think you're here for a purpose, all right? You just saw a momentary snapshot of this individual's life, and you don't know how he's going to affect somebody else's life for the better. You know, somebody may see him, and that may be the spark that makes them want to go out and be a medical researcher and find a cure for cancer.
Oh, okay. I've heard stories like that. I can tell some of them, too, from holy men who told me. I can tell it in 60 seconds or less. You ready for this one, Victor, and everyone else in the Savage Nation? I'll tell it when I come back. And, Victor, by the way, let me send you a very special Christmas present. It's a copy of my book, Abuse of Power, because I have nothing else to give you. And by the way, before I go to the break, I want to give you a very important message, since we're talking about legacies, from one of my advertisers, because I told you, intelligence, legacy, you want to pass that on, don't you, to your children and grandchildren? You want to share your wisdom with your kids and grandkids? Well, it's a very important thing to do. But if you suffer from hearing loss, as I've told you, this gift could be lost. Leaving that legacy requires effective two-way communication. There happens to be a medical breakthrough for those with hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. It's a revolutionary solution. It's 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. If you wish to learn about this new breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will cherish for a lifetime, all you got to do is call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. That's 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it now. Call 1-800-953-5453 or again, envoymedical.com. For a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem, visit envoymedical.com.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. We're ranging in topics from mortality to memorializing the dead. And I don't know whether you're interested in this or not. It's one of those things that you just have to take a shot at. And as John Burroughs, the great naturalist, wrote, if you bait your hook with your heart, the fish will always bite. So I pray that although you're not fish, you will continue to bite by listening to the Savage Nation. Let's go to New York City. And the great WOR Sergi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hi, good afternoon, good evening, Mr. Savage. Thank you very much for this fantastic topic. My mom passed away in 1996 on New Year's after 11-day coma. And I would just walk to the 10 miles to the to where she was in the intensive care unit. And consequently, I read St. Timothy wrote, "Death is sorrowful suffering, and watch me." And late, just 3 days ago, a friend of mine's mom passed on, and I was able to stay sober. I was able to handle it as a gentleman instead of losing it and freaking out. So,
well, of course, but then it wasn't your mother. So you weren't offended, or let's say not offended, but made uncomfortable by my memorializing my mother today. I mean, you didn't think it was too personal?
It's touching. And love is a very touching and it's a fantastic cathartic.
Well, you know, here's what I figure. It's a universal issue. Everyone listening to this show has lost someone or will lose someone. And we don't talk about it. We make a joke out of everything in this country or trivialize it. And I do believe that despair is part of the human condition. And despair can be turned into joy if you stare at it, you know, and that's all there is to it. There's no more to be said. I appreciate very much that you're listening and you're calling the show. That's what it comes down to. Why do we ignore so many of these things? You know, when I lived in New York, it was something I noticed. Wherever I drove in New York, because it's such an intensely intense city in terms of population, obviously, there was a graveyard somewhere, particularly on the Long Island Expressway. Death was everywhere. Or you'd see funeral cars, you know, processions, rather. You don't see them in the San Francisco area. It's an amazing thing, an amazing cultural difference. And although the people recognize death in New York, they're far more alive. While out here, everyone tries to pretend they're immortal, and they're almost the walking dead. They're ghouls. They're filled with despair and hatred. It's an amazing thing. It's a cultural difference, and I don't know whether it's a fact of hiding or who comes out here. Do they want to hide from reality? I don't really know the answer, what type of person is drawn here. I don't really know the answer. I know this, then the Lord caused to rain upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plains and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. There's an amazing passage from Genesis that you can take certainly literally, if you wish, if you're a biblical absolutist, or that you can take in a figurative manner and say, what does that mean? Well, Bob Dylan wrote a great song called Don't Look Back. Obviously, he derived it from the Bible, where some of the greatest literature and poetry has derived from. As you well know, who are the greatest sources of all writings are the Bible and, of course, Shakespeare. You ask any great writer, they'll tell you the same thing, except a writer from San Francisco who has absolutely no roots in anything, which is why there's nothing being written here in San Francisco worth anything, except My Abuse of Power, which is the greatest book written since Jack London. For of old time I have broken thy yoke and burst thy bands, and thou said, I will not transgress upon every high hill and under every leafy tree. You did recline playing the harlot. And I had planted you a noble vine, holy right seed. How then art thou turned into a degenerate plant? I'm reading to you from Jeremiah. Or a strange vine unto me. For though thou wash thee with nitre and take thee much soap, yet thine iniquity is marked before me, saith the Lord God. What do you think that means, children? You take soap and you wash yourself, but you're still dirty. Does that not tell us everything we need to know about the Botox lips of America? About the trout lips of America? About the reality shows filled with the saddest women in the history of the world, cavorting as though they're special, when in fact they're just fallen and very, very sad role models for our children?
Savage.
Try to imagine a human mind like this. Just for a second. Just try to imagine being Mozart for 10 seconds. Anyway, here we are back on the Savage Nation, coming down to reality. The fact of the matter is he still had to eat, talk, walk. He still had the emotional problems that we all have. Yet he had this gift that was obviously in another celestial hemisphere or from another celestial hemisphere. It's hard to say. And it's astonishing when you actually tune your mind into a thing like that, what it does for you. And before I take my next call, I really want to talk about that with regard to children. Many of you know in raising children to play classical music for them, to do things on a higher plane for them, and certainly keep them away from the degeneracy of the popular culture to the best extent you can, and then hope for the best, because they're going to be exposed to it anyway. And then the kids will tend to gravitate towards the jello of the mind anyway. No matter what you do, they're going to go to, you can give them the caviar or the best in the world, and they're still going to eat the jello when you turn your back. But what you got to do is give them the best you can, because it will stay with them. I can guarantee you it'll stay with them. Let's go to Rich on WRKO in Boston. Rich, thank you for calling the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, to the point, kind of pithy. I was thinking of what you were saying about Mozart, and you being a Stradivarius, that was another segment you did, probably evergreen, that Mozart being a genius and like a tuning fork, you're tuned to it. And it's like adding nitro to a dragster, and it just over-excites all your cells in your body, and it's connected to that interdimensional or different frequency. I often talk to conversations with ghosts myself.
You do. That's very interesting. No, I'm not laughing or mocking. Tell me about it.
When you feel the need, you go someplace nice like York, Maine, a place called the Cliff House, and sit on the cliffs and kind of commune, if you know what I mean.
And do you care to tell the millions of listeners to the Savage Nation, do they talk to you?
No, I think it's a one-way conversation, but you feel the presence.
But is it your ancestors who you're communing with?
I would say like a past father and mother, to be more specific, or almost father-in-laws.
So it's like, in other words, you speak to deities for your guidance?
Just close relatives, not deities.
All right, okay. I understand you don't want to divulge it because it's your business at the end of the day. But the primary point of your call is that, for me, Mozart is a tuning fork that lifts me into those other dimensions. Is that what you're saying?
And it may overexcite, because you are a tuning fork. It may over.
It does overexcite me, and I actually can't function. If I were to turn on the Requiem after this show on a stereo at as high as I could and stand in that room, my mind would shut down. I can't function.
So you have to use it, when you need it, and stay away from it when you shouldn't be using it.
Well, that's why I watch junk movies made by Hollywood at night. It relaxes me.
Exactly. But Mike,
I take my mind down to the level of an action movie sometimes. It's also good. I mean, when this show is over, I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to drive home. I'm going to have a very old cognac, and I'm going to memorialize my mother's Day of the Dead, so to speak, by lighting a candle and doing a prayer. That's what I'm going to do. Let me send you a special present for Christmas. It's my super best-selling novel, Abuse of Power, and I thank you for calling. So what would you like to talk about on this? I mean, I know this touched a raw nerve, and I don't know if I want to stay with this, but you do. I know many of you are fanatic, want to talk about this. And if you want to, that's fine. Let's go to Florida. Francesca, thank you for calling. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Savage. I can't forget the telephone call you had with your mother when you asked about her longevity and she what it was due to, and she answered, no sex.
You were listening. That was in maybe 2001, 2002.
She passed, yes. That's
unbelievable. Right. Well, my audience are like elephants. They have a long memory. You never can say one thing that they'll never forget a thing you ever said if they listen to you. Francesca, that's beautiful. Thank you. A copy of Abuse of Power goes out to you. So if you want to hear this famous call, why not today? I don't want to overplay it, but it is probably the most fitting day. I'll never forget. She was 81, 82. She was living on in a facility in Florida. And I called her while I was on the air, and I was talking to her and listened to what went on. What do you think is the secret to longevity?
What's the secret?
Yeah.
No sex.
All right, stop right there. No, she called. You see, she set me up. I want to show you what a sense of timing she had. She didn't just say no. You got to understand, everything's timing in humor. So I said to her, Ma, to what do you owe longevity? What's your secret to longevity? So she says, she didn't just say no sex. She said, in my case, I figured she'd say something like fish or whatever, or I don't smoke and I don't drink, because she didn't smoke or drink. She said, in my case, yeah, no sex. Now, that an expert would tell you that's timing. So I guess I learned a little bit here and there from her. But she did not drink. I know when she's younger, she drank one or two drinks, and she never liked it. I think she tried smoking for a period for about a week because her friends were smoking, and she hated it. And I think that was something to do with it. God only knows what she owed longevity to, other than having a good heart and being a clean living woman. That's all. And that's it. So here we are. Sacramento Ted, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
My goodness. Michael Savage, I've really got you.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, I honor what you're doing today for your mother. This is absolutely wonderful.
I hope you do. And I think that the men are less offended by this than the women. I don't think men get to ever talk about their mothers at all. It seems to be a no-no in our society. A man can't talk about their mother at all.
And it was absolutely the most wonderful thing I ever did, because I learned her on an adult basis. But, you know, we only got one mother. You know, she cleaned our dirty nose, wiped our dirty butt, listened to our problems, and whether we were right or whether we were wrong, with our mom, we were always right. You know that.
Well, my mother taught me how to walk. My mother taught me how to ride a bicycle. My mother taught me how to tie my first tie. My mother taught me how to dance before I went to a school prom. I mean, how many other things did we learn that we forgot about from our mothers, huh?
Everything. Our mom was there. Our father taught us the masculine things in our lives, but the tenderness came from our mom. You know that.
I know, my friend, and I appreciate the call. I remember I told you we had one man in the whole group. He was the tough guy. Remember I told you he owned a bar on the Upper East Side before anyone knew it was a cool place. He owned this incredibly upscale, you know, all the other men were merchants or whatever, or tradesmen, which is beautiful. But he was in a different league. He was a real fist fighter, tough man. Everyone looked up to him. He was very quiet. And the boys gravitated to him, because boys will always gravitate to the toughest man in the pack. And it's always been true from the beginning of tribal history until now. If there's any neighborhoods left, boys tend to like men who can defend themselves and teach them how to defend them. So we used to hang around with him. He didn't talk a lot, but he did tell us about his mother. It was the most amazing thing how he would get into it. I don't know what the guys, he would just start talking about his mother. We didn't know what he was talking about. We were afraid of him, so we didn't think it was odd. Whatever he did was godlike to us. But, boy, this guy was something. We'll call him John just for the sake of the show. And John would go on and on about his mother and this and how wonderful she was. And he used to say to us, just remember, just like that caller just said, you only have one mother, and you got to protect your mother, and your mother is everything to, you know, on and on and on. It was amazing, but tough, very, very tough men in the generation before me usually could be hard as nails. But when it came to their mother, there was a soft spot in them that was, it was something to behold. And I don't know that this exists anymore. I don't, you know, I'm a student of popular culture. You know, I love movies and whatnot. How many movies have recently been produced where a mother is turned, a mother is portrayed in the manner I just described to you? I don't even know that a mother is referenced anymore. It's as though these people in Hollywood came out of a test tube or a turkey baster, worse yet. Who are these lunatics in Hollywood that they don't understand that were born of mother? Do they have a contempt for women where they only use them as sex objects? I kind of think so. A woman can only be either a criminal or a sex object or something ditzy. Where is the sacred image of the mother? What's happened in our society that women are so denigrated by our popular culture? Well, I guess you have to look at the people in Hollywood and who makes movies, huh? Why don't you look into their backgrounds and ask them if they themselves have a wife and children? Kind of no. Kind of most of them don't have wives and children. Some of them don't have anything in their lives except hatred. Hatred for anybody who differs with them. They're all Democrats, by the way. Let's go to the calls. Sacramento, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. KSTE, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'd just like to thank you for not only taking my call, but talking about this, because I think it's important to a lot of people. And, you know, this Saturday it would be the four-year anniversary. I lost my mother at age 51, and I'm out here on the West Coast. I'm 27 years old, and I was struggling with what I should do, and I was just listening to you talk about your memorial for your mother, and I thought, you know, for me, my mother loved the water. For me, just to walk on the beach, you know, it's probably the best thing I can do, because it's the only place I can still hear her. And that's how I do. There's something.
Well, but you see, to each his own. To each his own. There's no necessity to follow another person's programmed plan for your tuning into your mom. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody finds their own way. They can feel their mother speaking to them, whether it's through music or through art or through nature. And it's and I really appreciate how you talked about for men, they really don't talk about the mothers.
And I dare say men are afraid to even show emotion to anybody, but let alone when talking about their mother. They're liable to be seen as what, a weakling or a sissy. The exact opposite is true. The exact opposite is true. That's all there is to it. Well, Chris, a copy of Abuse of Power goes out to you. I don't mean to trivialize the call, but it's the only Christmas gift I've got to give people, and I'm giving it Redding, California. Ken, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Sincerity, Dr. Savage.
Thank you.
That's why you grow on people. That's why you grew on me.
What were you saying? You're breaking up. Say it again, Ken. I'm sorry.
I said the sincerity that a talk show host in live talk radio over television, you must be sincere. Your audience knows that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, we can talk about the differential. It's just that you're breaking up a bit. I've said that before. With television, you have cameras, lights, action, okay? You have props. You have a beautiful woman. You have the legs. You have the lipstick. You have the flashing lights. You have on Fox News, every minute's a breaking news. That's there. It's like a conditioned reflex for rats. Every minute, whoosh, breaking news. Breaking news, every minute, breaking news. How much breaking news can there be? Every second, whoosh, breaking news. That's all, every 2 seconds. You know, whoosh, you're watching it, and whoosh, breaking news. But we don't have that here on the Savage Nation. All we have is, basically a wonderful support team. And either you got something to say, and you say it in the sincerest way you can, with as much background material if you're talking about facts, or you go out of business. That's all. It's as simple as that. But what motivates you to keep on a show? What motivates me to keep going every day? It's a day like today, truthfully, that gives me the reason to go on in the show. It's not just this, that I'm doing this today because I can do it or because it's my mother. I mean, it's because where else could I get to express my emotions to such an extent? No one wants to listen to you anyway in real life. There are no friends in this world. I don't know if you know that. There may be people that you know. How many of you have real friends? Let me go back again. There's a very important story to you young guys, and you know, sometimes I think I should hold workshops for young men in their 20s and early 30s because I run into them now and again, and it seems they're all lacking an older man in their life. I don't know what it is. Maybe they're role models or whatever, and I don't want to hold myself up as some savior. But here's what he said to us, that old guy, John, remember the tough guy, the fist fighter, the bar owner? He was telling us about so many different things. And he was talking about role models. And I'll tell you about it because we're running up against the heartbreak. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So before the break, if you've just tuned back in and we're tuning and listening and hanging on every word, remember John, the bar owner, the tough guy, the fist fighter when I was a kid, the friend of the family? So he would tell us about friends. And what did John say about friends? He would look at us, and we were all friends. I mean, we were a pack of kids, 7, 10 of us. We were close as can be. And he said, guys, when you get older, he said, you're going to basically walk alone. He said, when you're an older man, meaning when it was his age, 35 at the time, God knows how old he was, I don't know. You know, to us, he was like Methuselah, 35, a real old man. And he used to say, when you're an older guy, he said, if you can count one friend on one hand, you'll be a very lucky man. Now, we didn't know what that meant. We had no idea. And then he went into a long story about a partner he had had in the bar business who had robbed him of a lot of money. And it came to a very, very bad dispute. That kind of thing, you know. I mean, but kids don't understand those things because they assume that old gang of theirs is going to be, you know, with them forever when they get older. Well, yeah, you'll have a wife and maybe you'll have someone with kids, but basically the fun is going to be with the guys wherever. You're never going to hang around much with the wife and kids. You're going to be with your friends for the rest of your life in a pair of dungarees or something somewhere. Maybe in Oklahoma, it's still true. I don't know. But I don't think it's true, basically, in the porn belt. Every man walks alone, so. What else did he tell us, old John? It's not a bad story about John. I don't know where John is. I think he's still alive. He's about 95. And I think he's still hanging in there, tough as nails. This guy was something. Wow, could he drink? Yeah, he could drink. Don't tell me alcohol is bad for you. But he didn't suffer fools gladly. He told us another story once that I think I'll share with you. It's a very interesting story about anti-Semitism. He was Jewish. However, not in the traditional sense. When you say Jewish, you think right away not of an Israeli tough guy in a tank. You say Jewish, you think Woody Allen because of the popular culture. A schlemiel, a guy who's afraid of everybody. In other words, that kind of weakling like a Larry David. He was the exact opposite. A certified world-class fighter warrior, almost like an extreme. If you saw him, you'd see an extreme fighter. So he told us that he was a young man on the subways of New York. It was during the early part of World War II, and Nazis were making inroads in America before we went to war. There were actually a rally with 40,000 people in Madison Square Garden of the American Nazi Party, if you can believe it. And at that time, the Nazis were flexing their muscles in America trying to make an impact. So he said he was on the subway car, a subway car riding in Manhattan, and a guy got up and started cursing Jews and putting down Jews in the subway car. He said, I didn't say a word. He said, I waited till the train came to a stop. He said, I beat him until his head was so bloody. He said, I bashed his head between the car and the track, and I left him there a bloody pulp on the station. I mean, that was the kind of upbringing that a boy needs, frankly, to stand up for himself instead of being told to, you know, tolerate everything. I mean, there's a time for tolerance, I guess, and there's a time not for tolerance. There's a time for love, and there's a time for hate. There's a time to live and a time to die, a time to dance and a time to cry, you know. Let's play Turn, Turn, Turn in the Savage Nation. It's an incredible, incredible song by the Mamas and the Papas, but it comes from the Bible, of all things. There was a time that rock and rollers actually took biblical tunes, or verses, rather, and put them to words. You got that thing ready, guys? Or just...
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose.
Yep.
A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones. Stones together.
Ecclesiastes 3. So if you say the Bible is just an antiquated bunch of words, I'm sorry for you. And let me leave you with this thought so that you don't think it's all about a maudlin show that I gave you today. Yes, all is vanity, as Ecclesiastes wrote. But he also wrote that there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. Just remember that pleasure is part of your inheritance on this earth as a human being. It's not all about suffering. I want to thank you very much for listening to the show today. It meant an awful lot to me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Attached to the payroll tax cut, a literal poison pill by rolling back a Clean Air Act provision that will require a very small percent of the boilers in this country to cut back on the filthiest of all pollution, including mercury, arsenic, and lead. In the frosty air, they have attached a poison pill, colleagues, literally, because it will kill 8,100 more people than otherwise would have been killed from pollution. And they've attached that to the payroll tax cut. So how's that for a Christmas gift?
Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle up around the clock.
Here's all the latest news for you, collected from around the world and around the nation. As it appears on your one-stop shop, MichaelSavage.com. Some of it's from other places, but you can start there. God, where do I begin? Where do I begin? Well, this is a shocker. As you well know, MSNBC is more snotty nonsense by communists. But you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this, what I'm about to tell you. This despicable anti-American pro-tax evasion channel, MSNBC, seized on Mitt Romney's use of the phrase, keep America, America. And the network claims that the phrase plays homage to the Ku Klux Klan slogan of keep America, American. So therefore, if you say keep America, American, which was a phrase used by the KKK in the early 1900s, Mitt Romney is now a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Also in the news today, in addition to liberalism being a mental disorder, is Obama's warning of a government shutdown. He said he will act without Congress, the little tyrant, the big tyrant, big tyrant. And he's trying to get Democrats to send the Democrats Republican friends' email addresses so he can invade them. Yep. Yep, tyranny everywhere you turn. That's why I wrote Abuse of Power.
Should you, as AFL-CIO president, pay more in taxes as
yes.
the president?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't think you're paying your fair share right now?
I pay more than my fair share, I'm sure. But do I need to pay more? Yes. Do people at the bottom need a break? Yes. Do people at the top need to have more tax breaks? No. That's a system that doesn't work. Look, you know it. If taxes were voluntary, who would pay taxes? The rich ought to be taxed more. That's a plain, simple statement. They're not paying their fair share. They ought to pay more.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. In Iraq, hundreds in Fallujah, Iraq, burned the U.S. flag to celebrate troops pulling out of Iraq. Navy warship infested with Black Widow spiders. Nothing political about that, unless they're Democrats. I don't know if the spiders are Democrat or Republican or Independents, but we don't even know how they got on the ship. It's an interesting story. Bath, Maine, a Navy shipbuilder in Maine, says it had to fumigate a warehouse and parts of a warship because a shipment of parts from the West Coast contained about two dozen venomous Black Widow spiders. Ugh. Ooh. Really? Discovered earlier this month. Black Widows aren't found in Maine, but they're found in liberal California, where the shipment originated. The female spiders are known for their distinctive hourglass marking and their potentially lethal bite. Fits right into liberalism, doesn't it? Let's see what's on michaelsavage.com. On the top right, Obama on economic crisis. We didn't know how bad it was. He says he wished he knew the full extent of the downturn. Well, I guess he's learning on the job. Islamist vision of sin-free tourism raises alarm in Egypt. No alcohol and no bikinis. That means no tourists. Since they're not Islamists, I guess they'll go to Florida instead. Indonesian Islamic police shave mohawks and remove piercings. Not bad. It's a good start. Now if they could remove the burqas to go with it. Islamic government's angle for speech controls in the United States with the help of Hillary Clinton. Again, we're asking, why is the Department of Homeland Security letting bums block ports on the West Coast? Why? Cheney says Obama should have destroyed the drone. He asked nicely for them to return it. Wow. Whew. Hurricane predictors admit they can't predict hurricanes. Savage predicted that the Iranians could reverse engineer the drone, which they say they are doing, unfortunately. Iran threatens to block off the Strait of Hormuz. Trump withdraws from the presidential debate. I guess that leaves only Rick Santorum. Canada, first nation to pull out of Kyoto Protocol. Good for them. I always like Canada. Obamacare cost 100,000 jobs in January. Let's see what else is on my website. Canada bans veils at citizenship oath ceremony. Imprisoned Ponzi schemer fingers others in South Florida. You got to read the story. And for entertainment on michaelsavage.com, trout lips amongst movie stars who are getting their lips injected, where their lips wind up looking like the fish, the trout. If you look at the picture, you'll see before and after shots of so-called starlets. Their lips look like trouts in a trout tank. Charges of pedophilia in Hollywood, just the tip of the iceberg. I'm shocked. You mean things have changed since Harry Warner? No, impossible. Things have not changed since Harry Warner. I'm sorry. Pedophilia in Hollywood? Milk in Berkeley? Moo. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal. Frosty the Snowman is...
I am one man alone. I have no organization. I have no headquarters. I have no office. My office is a telephone booth, so to speak. My office is a cell phone and a computer. I have no network, none whatsoever. I'm a man alone. So how do I reach so many people? How do I reach so many people? Why do you listen? You've got 50, 70 radio stations in most metropolitan markets. You've got the unlimited internet access, newspapers, books. Why would you take the time out to listen to me? You have to understand, I ask myself this every day when I get up. Like, why the heck would they listen to me? I mean, I'm telling you my view of the world. And I'm not asking you to call and tell me, Mike, listening, because I don't want you to call on that, because I pretty much know the answer to the question. I'm posing the question for another reason. And I don't have a conclusion to what I just said. All I can say to you is that this is a very difficult business. It's a very difficult time. I've been immersed in a lawsuit for my honor. And here it is. It just shows you how life is. But you have to take it the way it comes. You get the cards dealt at you, and you play the hand. That's all there is to it. So at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, you know, what it's all about. What's your legacy? Does a legacy matter? There are no legacies anymore. That's another thing I have to tell you. When I grew up, a legacy mattered. I remember when I was 18 and struggling to figure it all out, I remember writing some blathering poetry or whatever, and then I wrote in my journal at the time that the mark a man leaves at his death is what he writes, you know, in that case, because I was a writer. But no one cares who the guy was who wrote what. The world changed with the advent of the internet and the computer. The whole world changed because there is no yesterday. There's not even a tomorrow. There's only now. There's not even a today. There's only a now. There's not even yesterday. There's not even an hour ago. There's only now. So what does a legacy mean? Do you really care what a man wrote, his body of work? Are you kidding me? There was a time in Jewish history when a man was buried with the books he wrote. Did you know that? You didn't know that. Books? Are you kidding me? Does anyone even know what the man did? Does anyone care what the man did? Does anyone care what the man stood up for? Does anyone care what the man stood up for in the battlegrounds of Iraq, or the CIA men who stood up and died for this country, who are now being attacked by the Obama administration? Men who gave their lives for this country to keep us safe from the communist bastards who want to turn us into slaves are now being prosecuted by Eric Holder. Does that not register in your mind as to tell you where we are living and how? I say to myself every day as I get up, no, it doesn't matter at all. The whole world is upside down. So that's that. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God hath already accepted thy works. Now listen to this. This is so beautiful, but you're never going to hear this in the media. Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in life. Now, when have you heard to enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life? You've never heard it. Maybe in a church you heard it. But the money sources, the money power, the media, for example, treats women like garbage, like they're exchangeable toys. You're tired of her, throw her out and get a younger one. You're tired of her, get rid of her, go run around. You're tired of her, become gay. You're tired of her, go to Thailand and have a sex tour. Why don't you read this? Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. Why don't you see that anywhere? The answer is because the verminous pornographers who own the liberals, who fund the ACLU, have taken down even the Ten Commandments from the religious, from the judges who are religious in this country. I mean, we've had and we still have judges who believe in God and believe in the law. But those who put up the Ten Commandments are mocked and attacked by the verminous scum from NYU, from Columbia, from Harvard, from Stanford, from all the lowest law schools in the land produce the sickest minds. Oh, they think they're brilliant because they manipulated their way into a law school and they can write a brief and this and that. They're on the law review. But when you analyze what they're doing to society, they're actually the stupidest people in the country when they debase their own nation. And what do they do with their genius? What do they do with their genius? They go after judges in the South who have a little Ten Commandments somewhere in the courtroom to keep things straight. I guarantee you Judge Kaczynski wouldn't have a Ten Commandments in his courtroom. No, he'd probably have... we'll let it go at that. This is a family show. But if you want to see this, go to Ecclesiastes 9. Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest, all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity, for that is the portion, that is thy portion in life. And in thy labor, wherein thou laborest under the sun. So there's glorification of work here as well. Love, loyalty, work. For whatever thou hand attaineth to do by thy strength, that do. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. In other words, don't complain that you're working too hard. Because when you're dead, you won't be able to complain anymore. Listen to this one. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. For the dead know not anything. It's amazing stuff. There's such poetry here. And then you turn to Shakespeare. To be or not to be, that's the question. Is it nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles, and by opposing end them? To die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep, to sleep, perchance to dream, that's the rub. For in that sleep of death what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. It gives us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time? The oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes when he himself might his quietest make with a bare needle. Who would bear this to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns, puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus conscience doth make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with the pale cast of thought, and enterprise of great pith and moment, with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Lose the name of action. Forgive me for not speaking the king's English. I speak the English of the ordinary man. I do not change my brogue to satisfy the times, nor do I change my emotions to satisfy the climes. Devoutly to be wished. And what was he complaining about? What was Hamlet complaining about through Shakespeare? What was Shakespeare complaining about, through Hamlet? And how does it relate to the judge? Well, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, if you're heartbroken, the law's delay. I've been sitting here waiting for 3 months to a judge in the same district court, by the way, to drop this one on me. The insolence of office, there you go, your senators. And the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes. But we don't kill ourselves, do we? Well, it's not because we're afraid of what might be in the next world. That's certainly not what keeps people from killing themselves. I mean, to an atheist, this might be the reason for fear of what might await them in the next world. It's because we are not allowed to kill ourselves if we're religious, Christians or Jews. Period. End of story. It's out of the. A Muslim as well is not permitted to kill himself. And I found out from a biblical scholar why, because we do not own our property, which is us. God owns us. Does that answer your question? Just listen to this and weep. Well, the war in Iraq is officially over, and Mr. Obama in the White House is taking full credit for our troops' victory in Iraq. And I wish it were a victory, but I'm not so sure it is. Joining us right now in the Savage Nation to talk about this and much more is former California Congressman Duncan Hunter, who was the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman Hunter, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
Well, what did you believe the president? I mean, you agree with him when he gave us his speech to our troops at Fort Bragg?
You know, President Obama made this speech at Fort Bragg, Michael, taking credit for ending the Iraq War. President Obama did not end the Iraq War. The 1 million Americans who served in Iraq won that war in 2008 when they wiped out the Mahdi Army, when they took down Baghdad with the surge, which incidentally then Senator Obama voted against, and when they turned around Anbar province in the west. The American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines won the Iraq War, and the one word that President Obama will not use because he opposed the surge is victory. We achieved victory in Iraq, And we did it despite the president, not because of him.
You write that the war was won despite Obama, not as a result of his leadership. Explain what you mean, please.
Let me tell you, when George Bush, in January of 2007, when he was expected to throw in the towel and give up on Iraq, instead of that, he said, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to send 20,000 more troops, and we're going to stabilize Baghdad, and we're going to win. That was called the surge. Those additional 20,000 troops, five brigades, were announced by the president on January 10th of 2007. Joe Biden immediately, then as a U.S. senator, rushed to the Senate floor with resolution number two opposing the surge. He was joined in that effort by Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Ted Kennedy, and the usual liberals who typically oppose the president on the war. They then came out with a resolution in the House, Resolution 63, that Nancy Pelosi authored, also opposing the surge, and ultimately that's what they voted on in the Senate. But the Democrats in the Senate could not get more than 56 votes, so they couldn't break the Republican filibuster, and the 20,000 additional troops, known as a surge, went to Iraq in the spring of 2007, and by September of 2007, violence was down 70%. When General Petraeus came and testified to Congress in September, he was able to announce successes throughout Iraq and especially in the Baghdad area. At that point, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton shut up about the surge. But until that point, they did everything they could to block what turned out to be a winning touchdown pass in the Iraq war. If they had had their way, we wouldn't have won in Iraq.
Obviously, this is a political ploy. He's a politician to help him in the polls, correct?
I think that President Obama is now going to claim that he successfully ended the Iraq war, and he's going to try to use that as one of the major foreign policy achievements of his administration as he moves into the election season. This is clearly an issue that is designed to the speech that he made at Fort Bragg, I think, very clearly shows that he is going to utilize that as an attempt to show foreign policy expertise as he moves into the spring and summer months of the election year. And it's really a disservice to the American people. He's never used the term victory. Our troops were victorious in Iraq. They won that war. They didn't just end the war. And the president doesn't end the war by bringing the troops home. The war was ended in 2008 when we took down the Mahdi army in Basra, when we stabilized Baghdad, when we stabilized Anbar province to the west.
Why is it that Obama blames Bush for the bad economy but refuses to give him credit for winning the war in Iraq?
Well, I think that President Obama doesn't have many accomplishments to point to as the economy continues to sour. He's turning more and more, I think, to foreign policy. I noticed that he mentioned Osama bin Laden the other day, and so he's going to clearly point to Iraq, and hopefully he's hoping that he will be able to point to Afghanistan as a success story. But he did not win the war in Iraq, and it's a real disservice to the folks who fought in that war, the Americans who fought and bled and died in that war. And both of my sons fought in the Iraq war, one as a Marine, one as a soldier. It's a real disservice for one of the guys that tried to stop the game-winning touchdown. That was a surge. He tried to block it along with Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy to now take credit for the victory.
Where can we read more?
Well, you know, you can get this book at this is Victory in Iraq, How America Won, and you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or you can pull it up on the Kindle, on e-books on Kindle. And it basically covers the war from start to finish. When we first went across that line in March of 2003, with the 1st Marine Division going up to the right, the 3rd Army Division going up to the left, we took down Baghdad in a very short period of time. And we were then faced with this occupation problem. We had the Sunnis, that was Saddam Hussein's tribe, starting to rebel in western Iraq. They realized that one man, one vote, that this democracy that we were bringing to Iraq would bring them down because they only had 20% of the population. The Shiites, who were closely aligned with Iran, some of the Shiite leaders, including Muqtada al-Sadr, tried to, understanding that they needed to try to take control of the Baghdad government when the elections were taken, finally took place. They started basically a firefight in Baghdad and lots of other points around eastern Iraq. And so we had Shiite and Sunni wars going on at the same time. The Americans finally got the tribes in the West to turn on our side and to crush al-Qaeda. They turned against al-Qaeda. And when the surge came into Baghdad, we were able to stabilize Baghdad with the 20,000 additional soldiers. And finally, we sent the 1st Iraqi Division down to Basra, and they wiped out the Mahdi Army, which was closely aligned with Iran. And at that point, the government matured, and the military started to mature. You know, we'd had a ragtag Iraqi military. They started to come around. They were being trained by American Marines and soldiers. So this was a massive effort with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears by American Marines and soldiers and airmen and sailors. We won this thing. We won it in 2008, and we finally wiped out the Mahdi Army down in Basra. And this is one of a very, very difficult victory, but one that was achieved by guys carrying 100-pound payloads with combat armor and ammunition loads in 110-degree heat, big family separations for long periods of time, multiple rotations in tour. And the fact that the President of the United States will not use the term victory when we clearly had a victory in Iraq is a real disservice to those million-plus Americans who served and their families and friends.
Well, anyway, that's politics, I guess. Congressman Hunter, well, thanks again for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you. And if you get a chance, take a look at my book, Victory in Iraq, How America Won. It tells a true story of how we won the Iraq War despite President Obama and despite Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
I was laying in bed last night about 3 in the morning when I started to laugh out loud. And I rarely laugh out loud in bed because it would disturb the dog. He'll think I'm crazy. And I started to laugh hysterically because the thought occurred to me that when I was a youth and still living with my parents, maybe 17, 16, 17 era, I left pretty young. I don't know when I left, 20. I have no idea when. I remember coming home after a night of carousing with my friends. Well, frankly, I remember coming home to that little attached brick house with the rock-solid front door and turning that lock. There's something about that door. I've never been able to duplicate the doors they had on houses in those days and the locks. When you turn the tumbler on those houses, you heard the tumbler turn. You felt like Willie Sutton breaking into a bank. It was such a wonderful sound. And the minute the door opened, mothballs and heat assailed all of your senses. My mother kept the heat up at around, I'd say, 90 in the winter. And she put mothballs in every article of clothing known to me. And like the whole closet. You got to picture this house. An attached house, so to speak. Semi-attached, right. Brick, a row house, in other words. Think of a British movie from the 50s. Remember those movies, brick-attached houses? Now think Queens, 50s, post-war attached houses. Small, maybe 20 feet wide. The lot's 100 feet long. The house is maybe, 20 by 60. The yard's 40, front and rear. I don't really know. But the house was narrow, but it worked for me. It was like, to me, a palace after where we had come from. And when I got in that, so mothballs were in every clothing bag, but more than the clothing bags. In the hallway when you went in, and so hallway, you had to walk in sideways into the vestibule. But to me, it was wonderful. I didn't care it was a small hallway. At least I had a hallway. To the immediate right of the hallway was a closet door. She had mothballs in there. Every piece of clothing and a vacuum cleaner to go with it. Everything was neat. Don't get me wrong. Nothing was jumbled. But in every coat, a mothball. The woman had, God bless her, she had a phobia about bugs. I don't know what it was. To keep the fur. I don't know what. But I used to say, my, it's so hot in here. My eyes are smarting from the mothballs. Never mind, I like the heat. That was the end of the discussion. There was no discussing it at that point. She would have been great in talk radio, my mother. She closed the argument down just by answering what you started to say. There was no discussion. Never mind, I like the heat. That was it. There was no arguing, no reasoning. Perfect caller to a radio show. Actually, perfect host. But what was this thing with the mothballs? I don't understand. I'm starting to think there may have been a health benefit to mothballs that we don't even understand yet. That's when I broke into laughter in bed, and Teddy rolled over and looked at me like I was crazy. Play Jingle Bell Rock, would you?
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell
swing. Oh, I'm not going to get too wound up today. Much.
Snowing and blowing.
I'm not going to get too wound up today. Not.
Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Seen the pictures of me yet? That's a great picture with the sunglasses.
Jingle bell time.
If I didn't have the brains I have, I would have been a movie star. Hold it, that's a great line. You know, I'm looking at myself, how good-looking I really was at my birthday, which wasn't too long ago. If I didn't have the brains I was gifted with, I would have been a movie star by now. And just think of what you would have lost. Indianapolis, Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Your Mama Savage was on to something with the mothballs. She probably never saw a mouse or anything in her house as long as she kept those mothballs going.
She hated mice. She was terrified of them. But she was trying to kill the moths. How did she kill the mice?
One of the chemicals in the mothballs, apparently, because my mother and my grandmother did the same thing. They never had mice in their house. And according to a home remedies book that my mother had, the mothballs, one of the chemicals in them, is a deterrent to mice.
You're kidding. She was terrified of mice. She was a strong woman and not very frightful, but terrified of mice. And I remember once we were in a rented cottage in the mountains, and a mouse got in the cottage. There were no mothballs there because she primarily used them in the in the house we lived in. She didn't have any up in the mountains. And man, she jumped up on a chair screaming with a broom at the mouse. Why are women afraid of mice? I don't want to go into it. I'm sorry. This is going to start the... Anyway, thanks for the call. I got the picture. I don't want to go into it. I'm here with a dog alone in a room. Ask people who know me. That's my life. I don't even want to go out for dinner anymore. I can't take it. I can't listen to people in restaurants. Is that a mental illness? Not being able to listen to other people in a restaurant? You know, that may be a DSM thing. Inability to sit in restaurants and listen to others. But it actually goes back to my grade school teacher, because I remember in the fifth grade, fourth grade, third grade in the Bronx at PS 48, they had report cards. Today, I don't think they have report cards. Today, the students give a report card on the teacher, because it's exactly the opposite. It's communism today. Today, the gangbanger gets to report on the teacher to the goon in the principal's office who's snorting coke, having sex with underage children, and robbing the school district. And then they attack a teacher if the teacher actually demands anything of them. But in my day, they had report cards. So, you know, you got the regular thing in reading, A, B, C, D, E, writing, A, B, C, D, E, whatever, A, B, C, D, right, an F. Then it came down to character. There was a whole section in the report card out there. This is like the Dark Ages. They wouldn't even dare have character things like that, right? Attention span. That would be considered a violation of the civil rights of a person who's a goofball and can't focus in the classroom. Okay, attention span, they would have given me. So the one I'll never forget as long as I live, it said, respects the rights of others. I always got a D in it. And what do you mean by respects the rights of others? I talked over other people. I wouldn't listen to the teacher. The teacher would ask me a question. I'd laugh at her. I was always goofing around with another kid in the class who was a basic clown. In fact, she separated us in the classroom when she put him in a diametric opposite from me in opposite corners in the classroom, because we were always like egging each other on. So they put Barry on the front right seat and me on the rear left seat, right? So Barry and I were bored. We couldn't goof around with each other. I remember this as long as I live. So we devised a string system under the legs of our chair, like prisoners in a way, because school was prison to me, to be honest with you. How did I stay so many years and get so many degrees? I don't know. I hated school. A jail filled with bad toilet water on the teacher's fat legs. So Barry's in the right seat. I'm in the left in the back. How do we communicate? We ran a string across the bottom of the classroom floor, around the chair legs, my chair, his chair. We had to get all the other kids involved and not get caught, by the way. That takes a lot of work. We'd egg the kid next to us, pass it on, like in a jail. Think of a 1945 prison movie, like a black and white movie, right? And they got, pass it on. So you'd nudge the kid next to you when the teacher had her back to you, pass it along, the string, right? And we tie a note to the string. And then it would be passed along from Barry to Michael, Michael to Barry. That's what we had to do, in other words, in school. So because of that, I got caught enough times They gave me a D in respects the rights of others, okay? That kind of I'm just remembering silly things. Who would have ever expected that I'd be so successful as a broadcaster and an author? I truthfully, my poor father died thinking I was a total and abject failure who would amount to nothing because I didn't do well in the antique store. I'm sorry. It's just another world. It's just, I'm not laughing at him. I'm laughing with him, truthfully. You know, if he was alive today, he wouldn't be proud of me. He'd be putting me down anyway. Let me tell you that right now. Cymbal shot. I know people say, oh, don't worry, Mike. If your father was alive, he'd be so proud. No, he wouldn't. He'd be seeing if he could run me down and make me feel bad. You know, that's the way it is. I'm telling you, families, don't count on your family. My immediate family is one thing. But I'm talking about outside the immediate circle. Not one relative, even those who have fed off me for a few years, have even sent me an email saying congratulations on the new book. Not one of them. Never. None. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, what does it say about them? I don't need the email. Wouldn't you think you'd be proud of a family member? Wouldn't you want to be part of it? Wouldn't you want to come along for that ride? Wouldn't you want to taste some of that stardust? Wouldn't you want to bask in his happiness for a few seconds? Look, all we have on the earth is a short dance in the sun. I've told you that. All we ever get is a short dance in the sun. And people don't even understand by being spiteful to the next man, what they're doing is they're cutting off their own legs. That's the point of the whole story. All right, let me move on. It was a long-winded speech about etymological, you know, roots and words and all the way back again to my fifth grade experiences. And I'm having a nice time. I don't have any pain in my chest, no pain in my heart, no pain in my legs, no pain in my joints. Although my knees hurt because I cheated on my diet today and got a pizza. I ate dairy and my knees are killing me. I tried to trick my body. You can't trick your body. Did I tell you that 3 years ago I was limping? I couldn't walk? I swear to God, my joints were shot. My arches were so painful. I have a picture of my son. He took us on a trip to Mexico. Remember I told you about the bed in Cancun that had blood on the mattress when I got there? What a shock it was. He said, Dad, come on, we'll get you. He got me the best room in the hotel, top floor, corner, so Dad has air. Dad doesn't like going anywhere. Dad is like a character from another era. I don't like really going anywhere. I like my own little village, right? I go with them. I get there, and the bed, I don't like, there was something wrong with it. I pull back the cover. There's a huge blood stain about a foot wide, dried blood on the mattress. Swear to God. That was in a hotel in Cancun, you know, that today they're finding heads hanging from lampposts there. Oh, what bad people were in the lobby of that hotel. I could feel it, man. That was bad then. I could just feel it. You know, you could look at certain guys and know that they're murderers. You ever get that feeling? I got an elevator like a few weeks ago. Yeah, it was in my building now that I think about it. This guy gave me the creeps. White guy, 5'9", lean. He was a murderer. Never saw him in the building before. Now that I think about it, I think I'm changing my address. I'll be right back.
Savage.